385 feet. Take that number and hold it for a second. That is wider than a regulation American football field is long. Wider than the Hughes H4 Hercules, the flying boat that most people call the Spruce Goose. Wider than any aircraft that has ever left the ground in the entire history of powered flight. That is the wingspan of the Stratolaunch Rock, and it is not in a museum. It flies. Today, out of the Mojave Air and Spaceport in California's high desert, roughly 120 miles northeast of Los Angeles, where the air is thin, the runways are long, and the test pilots have always operated a little differently from everyone else. I'm Vector on Cleared Direct, here on Radio Hangar, and today I want to talk about a question that aerospace engineers have been arguing about since the early days of the space program. What if the most efficient way to reach orbit has nothing to do with a launch pad? What if the first stage of your rocket is already flying when the mission begins? Let's break this down from first principles. There is a misconception that gets into people's heads when they think about getting to orbit, and it is worth correcting right at the start. Altitude is not the hard part. Going up is something any sufficiently powerful rocket can accomplish. The challenge is velocity. To stay in low Earth orbit, you need to be moving at roughly 17,500 miles per hour, parallel to Earth's surface, so that the curvature of the planet causes your fall to miss the ground. That velocity has to be built entirely by your rocket, starting from zero, and it has to be built while fighting the atmosphere. Here is where air launch changes the equation. The lowest 20 or so miles of the atmosphere contain the overwhelming majority of the air that creates drag on an ascending rocket. If you start your rocket at 40,000 feet, you have already punched through the densest part of that problem. Your engine runs more efficiently in thinner air. The structural loads on the vehicle are lower during early acceleration. The aerodynamic heating problem is less severe before the rocket has built up serious speed. All of that allows you to build a smaller rocket for the same payload, or carry more payload on the same rocket. The engineering math cascades in your favor. There is a second advantage that engineers find equally compelling. An airplane can be anywhere. A fixed launch pad cannot. Cape Canaveral sits at about 28 degrees north latitude, which is well positioned for certain orbital inclinations, but far from ideal for others. A polar orbit satellite wants to launch from high latitude. Some equatorial orbit missions want the equator. An air-launched vehicle can position itself wherever the mission requires and release the rocket on the exact trajectory that works. No ground-based pad can offer that flexibility. And then there is weather, which every pilot understands at a visceral level. A fixed launch facility has to wait for the weather window to cooperate. An air-launched vehicle gets airborne, navigates to clear air, and drops the rocket when the conditions are right. Simple in concept. Extraordinarily complicated to execute, but the principle is sound. Orbital Sciences Corporation understood all of this by the late 1980s. They designed the Pegasus, a small, winged, solid-fueled rocket intended to be dropped from a carrier aircraft at high altitude and deliver small satellites to low Earth orbit. On April 5, 1990, a NASA B-52 Stratofortress flying out of Edwards Air Force Base dropped the first Pegasus over the Pacific Ocean. The rocket fell clear of the wing, the first stage lit, and a small research satellite reached orbit. It worked on the first attempt. That does not happen very often in the rocket business. The Pegasus has flown dozens of missions since that day. Northrop Grumman now operates it, using a modified Lockheed L-1011 TriStar called the Stargazer as the carrier, based at Vandenberg Space Force Base. The current version, the Pegasus XL, can put about 1,000 pounds of payload into low Earth orbit. By the standards of today's launch market, that is a small satellite. But Pegasus proved something important. It proved that you could reach orbit without a launch pad. The question that followed was obvious. If a small air-launched rocket works, can you scale it up to something commercially meaningful? That is where I want to pause for a moment, because this segment is supported by AviationSoul.com. They make aviation challenge coins for the milestones that actually matter. First, solo, private, pilot, instrument rated, CFI, the whole journey, beautifully made and built to last. AviationSoul.com, Paul Allen was the co-founder of Microsoft. He was also a serious aviator who owned multiple aircraft and had funded ambitious aerospace projects for years through his company Vulcan Inc., including the program that produced Spaceship One, the first privately crewed spacecraft to reach space. In 2011, Allen announced a new venture called Stratolaunch Systems, The goal was to build the largest airplane ever constructed, purpose-built to carry rockets large enough to matter commercially and air-launch them to orbit. He hired Scaled Composites to build it. If that name means something to you, you understand why that was the right call. Scaled Composites is Burt Rutan's company based at Mojave. Rutan's shop built Voyager, which flew around the world nonstop without refueling. They built Spaceship One and the White Knight carrier that launched it. They built White Knight 2 for Virgin Galactic. They have always specialized in doing things that have not been done before. Building the world's largest airplane was exactly their kind of project. The rock has a configuration that is unusual even before you grasp the scale. Rather than a conventional single fuselage, it has two fuselages joined by a single, massive wing. Each fuselage is roughly the length of a Boeing 737, and each has its own cockpit with a fully functional flight station. The crew can operate from either position. Between the two fuselages, the wing center section provides the hardpoints where payload hangs during the mission. Six turbofan engines, the same Pratt & Whitney engines that power the Boeing 747-400, are spaced across the wing. The empty weight of the aircraft approaches 500,000 pounds. Maximum takeoff weight is roughly 1,300,000 pounds, making it one of the heaviest aircraft ever built, as well as the widest. Final assembly at Mojave required reconfiguring buildings specifically to accommodate that wingspan. Taxiing required careful coordination because the wingtips overhang aircraft parking areas on both sides when it passes down the ramp. The engineering challenge was not just designing the airplane, it was building it and then figuring out how to operate something that big on an airfield that was not designed for it. Paul Allen died on October 15, 2018. He never saw the aircraft fly. The first flight of the Rock happened on April 13, 2019, from the Mojave Air and Spaceport. A crew of two flew it for 2.5 hours, reaching a maximum speed of about 189 miles per hour and a maximum altitude of 17,000 feet. For a first flight of the world's largest aircraft, the test results were remarkably clean, but without Allen, the original business plan could not hold together. The purpose-built rocket that was supposed to hang under the rock and deliver significant commercial payload to orbit was canceled. The company was sold, reorganized, and began looking for a different mission. What they landed on may ultimately prove more durable than the original vision. Hypersonic research. The Department of Defense has a problem that has grown more urgent over the past several years. Adversary nations have been developing and fielding hypersonic weapons, vehicles that fly at Mach 5 and above through the atmosphere on trajectories that are difficult to track and difficult to intercept with existing systems. The Pentagon needs to develop hypersonic vehicles of its own. Developing them requires testing them at realistic speeds in real atmospheric conditions requires flight test data that no other method can fully replicate. A wind tunnel gives you aerodynamic data but cannot replicate the full thermal and structural loading of actual hypersonic flight. A rocket sled on a test track gives you speed but not the real aerodynamic environment at altitude. A sounding rocket gives you one flight per vehicle with no recovery. None of those approaches gets you the combination of real flight conditions, real data quality, and the ability to inspect and reuse the vehicle afterward. Stratolaunch's answer is the Talon A. A small, delta-winged vehicle about 28 feet long, designed to be dropped from the rock at altitude, light its own engine, accelerate to Mach 5 and beyond through real atmosphere, collect real flight data across the full aerodynamic and thermal environment, and then land and be recovered. Not destroyed, not lost, recovered. Inspected, flown again. In 2024, Stratolaunch completed the first successful powered hypersonic flight of the Talon A2, reaching Mach 5. The vehicle flew, collected data, and was recovered. The ability to recover a hypersonic test vehicle rather than losing it on every test run is a meaningful step forward in how this kind of research gets done. Stratolaunch is now developing the Talon Z, a larger hypersonic vehicle intended to carry customers' own hypersonic payloads for testing under operational conditions. The ROC becomes, in effect, an on-demand hypersonic range. You contract with Stratolaunch, you bring your hardware, you fly it at the speeds and altitudes you actually care about, and you get the data back. Now, the data tells an interesting story about where the broader air launch concept has stumbled. Virgin Orbit tried to crack the commercial small satellite market with a similar architecture. They modified a Boeing 747-400, named it Cosmic Girl, and built a rocket called Launcher One that hung under the left wing. Their first launch attempt in May 2020 failed when a fuel line ruptured during the burn. The second attempt in January 2021 reached orbit. They flew successfully a handful of times, and then in April 2023, Virgin Orbit filed for bankruptcy. The technology worked, that is worth stating clearly. The technology worked. The problem was economic. An expensive carrier aircraft with high maintenance costs, limited payload capacity, and premium per kilogram pricing could not compete in a market where SpaceX's Falcon 9 was driving the cost of conventional launch steadily downward for much larger payloads. Commercial small satellite customers found that the flexibility advantages of air launch were not worth the price premium when conventional rideshare options kept getting cheaper. Here's what most people miss about that outcome. It is not an indictment of air launch as a concept. It is evidence that air launch occupies a specific niche, and forcing it to serve a mass market runs into hard economics. The mission has to justify the architecture. When the mission does justify it, air launch has real advantages that conventional facilities cannot match. Where Stratolaunch has repositioned itself is exactly where those advantages are worth paying for. Government hypersonic testing, defense research programs that need operational flight conditions, specialized orbital missions where trajectory flexibility or launch-on-demand capability justifies a premium. Those markets are smaller than the commercial satellite constellation market, but they are markets where the unique capabilities of the platform are genuinely valuable. There is something worth paying attention to here from a practical pilot perspective. The Mojave Air and Spaceport sits at about 2,790 feet elevation. The main runway is just over 12,500 feet long, which gives you some sense of what it takes to operate an aircraft at maximum takeoff weights in that weight class in the high desert. When Stratolaunch operations are active, NOTAM activity in the Mojave area can be significant. The hypersonic test corridors extend out over the Pacific, and coordination with other airspace users is part of the operational planning for every mission. This is a growing reality across the country. The Federal Aviation Administration's Office of Commercial Space Transportation has been working for years on how to integrate space launch, re-entry, and hypersonic test operations into the national airspace system without continually shutting down large volumes of airspace for everyone else. Air-launched operations are in some ways easier to manage than ground-based vertical launch because the carrier aircraft operates under normal air traffic control during transit to the release point, and the actual drop zone can be positioned away from congested airspace. But as the tempo of these operations increases, the coordination overhead grows for everyone in the system. What I keep coming back to with Iraq is the lineage it sits in. In the late 1950s and through the 1960s, a modified B-52 named Balls 8 was the carrier aircraft for the North American X-15 program at Edwards Air Force Base. The X-15 was dropped from the wing, lit its rocket engine, and flew to the edge of space at speeds that remain unmatched by any winged-piloted aircraft. The concept was proven in those flights over the same Mojave Desert, where the ROC now operates. Use a conventional aircraft to carry the research vehicle to altitude. Give it a clean release and let it fly an envelope the carrier could never reach on its own. 60 years later, with different materials, different avionics, different manufacturing methods, and dramatically different scale, the ROC is doing the same thing. The fundamental insight has not changed. A first stage made of wings and turbofan engines operating in the airspace you understand is sometimes the most elegant path to the flight envelope you actually care about. There will be more air launch architectures. Some will work and find their niche. Some will not find a market that justifies the investment. The ROC has found its mission, a hypersonic test platform operated out of Mojave, carrying research vehicles to the edge of what the atmosphere can do. 385 feet of wingspan, taking off from the high desert. It is still one of the more remarkable things flying today. Sources for this segment include Northrop Grumman's Pegasus program documentation, Stratolaunch's published technical data, the FAA Office of Commercial Space Transportation, and reporting from Aviation Week and Space Technology, more at radiohangar.com. I'm Vector, cleared direct.